Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is noted international photographer Frederick Brenner. An anthropologist by education, his photographic work over the first 25 years of his career involved capturing Jewish culture all over the world with the idea of depicting the portable identity of Jewish people, adopting the traditions and manners of their host country while maintaining a central Jewish identity. During those 25 years, he photographed across Europe, North America, South and Central Asia, throughout the Middle East, and North Africa. Those photographs have been collected in 5 books and 3 films and a major exhibit and book project, Diaspora, Homelands in Exile. Since 2006, he's focused his time and energy on a new project, one that cuts through the political rhetoric and violent language and action surrounding Israel and the West Bank, in a project titled This Place, which features his work along with the work of 11 other major contemporary photographers, people like Thomas Struth, Rosalind Solomon, Wendy Ewald, Giles Perez, and Stephen Shore, in a multi-year examination of the land and its peoples. A place where Brenner says every single community drawn to this place by its birthplace from monotheism can be viewed as the other by every other community. The result is a new traveling exhibit currently at the Brooklyn Museum, and Brenner will be a guest of Congregation B'nai Emunah Thursday evening at 7. He'll be speaking about his development as a photographer and screen significant images from his career. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Frederick Brenner, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Give us a sense of how this place came about. You gathered all these photographers that spent anywhere from 2 to 3, maybe even longer years, photographing various places in Israel and in the West Bank. What were you trying to capture with this place?
In order for people to understand what I was trying to capture, I should maybe speak about the genesis, how this project came into being. I am an artist, but I was trained as a social anthropologist. And I spent about 25 years traveling all around the planet, basically spending about 6 months over 40 different countries. So I spent 6 months in Yemen, 6 months in India, 6 months in Ethiopia, 3 years in America, 3 years in the former Soviet Union, etc., etc., trying to question how the Jews were able to retain their specific identity and simultaneously becoming the other, the defining other, wherever they lived, and how Jews were able to live and survive with a portable identity. And I did that for 25 years. I didn't wake up one morning thinking that I was going to undertake such a journey. I don't believe one undertake anything. I believe that we are undertaken by the thing we pretend we undertake. It's always what we do not know about ourselves which brings us to accomplish what we do accomplish. And so I was exploring a very large spectrum of identities through time and space over 25 years, and which was of this outer journey was first and foremost a journey of self-exploration. It was a journey where I retrieved many of the threads which weave the complexity of who I am. And it has been about reclaiming those many threads which weave the complexity of who I am. And so I spent 25 years creating this chronicle of the Jewish people in the 20th and 21st century. And in 2003, I published a book called Diaspora, Homelands in Exile, which in a way show this amazing puzzle that I've been piecing together. And so I published this book, and I took a kind of break for about 2 years. I didn't want to know too early what I would do after, because I know my propensity to embrace big projects.
Yes.
And I would say 2003 was the peak of the Second Intifada, and I was deeply disturbed by the way this part of the world was being described. And I think it was unfair both for the people to whom these critics were being addressed and for the people from whom those critics were emanating. And I thought Israel and the West Bank is an incredible opportunity for each of the three narratives which have been in conflict for the last 2,000 years to maybe find a common ground. And this region obliges us to really exit those very narrow categories, right, left, for, against, victim, perpetrator. And within a frame of about a year and a half, I started to envision a project whose working hypothesis took shape over a period of about a year, and I'll try to tell very quickly what this working hypothesis became.
Yes.
I basically thought, what would happen if I would be able to invite 10, 20, 30, I didn't know the number at that time, not to invite not journalists, not photo reporters, but really artists who use photography to address questions about the human condition. What would happen if I would be able to provide enough time, enough means, and enough tools? And I will explain what I mean by that. To invite some of the most influential artists of our time to recontextualize Israel and the West Bank as place and metaphor. Israel and the West Bank as the place of the shared origin, the place where three monotheism, which gave birth to three major narratives, have been in conflict for the last 2,000 years. In other terms, an attempt to really explore Israel and the West Bank as a place where the map of the sacred overlap, compete, and ultimately exclude each other, to quote Moshe Halbertal, a major philosopher based in Israel. And the entire idea was to invite authors, I would say poets, in the modality that they use through their medium. Through a poetic approach, I thought that we could maybe have a chance to shift the place from where we address questions, exit a dual perspective for Israel against Israel, victim, perpetrator, and look behind or beyond the political narrative. The question was not to bypass it or ignore it, but really try to look at the archaic stakes before it become political and religious. And when I say Israel and the West Bank as place and metaphor, which is really the core of the project, I mean Israel. The first metaphor has to do with Israel as a place of radical otherness, a place where every single person is the other of somebody else, close and far others. Among Jews, an Ethiopian for a Russian, a Moroccan for a German, a French for an American, but an Arab Christian for an Arab Muslim, an Armenian for the Jew, and you can draw all the possible diagonals as possible. And Israel and the West Bank as a place of radical dissonance.
Let me ask you a question for a moment. You spent 25 years trying to understand how Jewish identity has survived and thrived around the world as a part of the other and within a community of itself in all these various cultures. What about all these photographers coming in to try to discover this in a 2 or 3 years period, given the fact that it is a place of others, as you describe, and with all the political turmoil that surrounds this land?
Again, yes, in a way, I got an advantage because I spent 25 years doing that. But the very reason why I invited others was because originally I intended to do it myself. It's because while I was being born to this working hypothesis and while I was shaping and carving this working hypothesis in, I would say, with the photographers, because each of the photographers that I approached was able to play like a soundboard, enabled me to really sharpen the working hypothesis. But because I looked at Israel and the West Bank as a place of radical otherness, it very soon appeared to me far more interesting to invite others to question this otherness than to do it by myself. And photographers were, I would say, triggered by this working hypothesis. They understood that it was not another project about Israel, and they came on board. And the first thing, in order to answer your question, The first thing, they were, once they manifested an interest to take part in this project, they were offered a 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks exploratory mission in order to see if they were really interested beyond the working hypothesis that they were offered. And so they were offered 2.5 weeks in a way to travel through, the landscape, but more than the landscape and to meet with the people, to travel through the largest possible spectrum of narratives. And the idea was to get them totally confused, but on a very high level.
I would think, as an artist coming into this, knowing the politics of everything, I would probably want to stay as far away from the politics as I could to get a sense of what the place really was.
Now, this is exactly what happened. I invited them because of the nature of their work and because I thought that they would really look, as I say, at the archaic state. They will look far beyond the political narrative. You cannot ignore the political narrative. But basically, Israel and the West Bank is a place where every issue is being magnified. So this is really the place where the particular and the universal meet. And this is why photographers quickly embraced this project, because they saw it as an incredible platform to pursue their oeuvre that they started, years back. And they saw this new project as full of potentialities for their own work.
As I understand it, you initially were not going to photograph for this project. You were going to coordinate it with all these photographers. At some point, you decided to go ahead and participate, or was that, am I in error about that?
No. You're right. It was a kind of dance that I had with the project. Originally, I thought I would do it myself. Then, while the project started and having basically all the roles, I was the initiator, I was the producer, I was the fundraiser, I was basically the conductor of this very big symphonic orchestra, and my role was to get everybody to get according to its score, but everybody to play together. And then I thought I didn't have 1 minute. And it's only later that I said I really want to do something else than raising money and conducting this orchestra. And this is where I decided to join the project in 2009, while it had already started.
Well, let me ask you about a couple of the images that are in the show, this place, who was coordinated by my guest today, a photographer, Frederick Brenner, creator of this place. He'll be speaking Thursday at Congregation B'nai Amuna in a lecture. A couple of your photographs I'd like to talk about. One is, which I think you said is sort of the first picture that sort of set your role, and it's a picture of the Palace Hotel, and it looks almost like a skeleton of a building.
Yes, it's the skeleton of the former biggest hotel in Jerusalem when Jerusalem was under Jordan rule, and then this building became the Minister of Industry, and then a private company started, wanted to develop a new hotel, in fact, a Waldorf Astoria. And these photographs has a, while I didn't know what I was doing when I was attracted by this skeleton, which is holding, it became the first photograph I took for the project. I never photographed architecture usually, and I never photographed in color in my entire career. So through these photographs, which I look at retrospectively as an image which should enable the viewer to decipher every single other photograph of my body of work called An Archaeology of Fear and Desire. And in fact, in the book, I decided that the photograph should even be placed before the book starts. So it's a photograph which starts like almost an epigraph for the entire project.
Now, another photograph that you did had sort of an interesting story about it. You were invited to I believe it was a Shabbat dinner?
Yes.
Of the Weinfeld family. And it's just, to me, it's an amazing portrait because it captures contemporary and the timelessness of the society, from the patriarch at the head of the table to some of the younger members of the family on the far end of the table. It's a very striking photograph.
I would say, you know, you create for yourself a plan, a journey, you know, and eventually the greatest things that happen out of eruptions. And you always need to leave some room, some space for something to erupt, even when you plan a photograph. And in this case, you know, I had spent the first 3 years of my career. In fact, I became a photographer through a first project, which ended up in a monograph about the ultra-Orthodox neighborhood of Jerusalem, known under the name of Me'ar She'arim. And while I was photographing, I had published this book 20 years, 25 years earlier. I never thought I would ever go back and deal with this aspect of Israeli life. I would say this community is a little enclave within Jerusalem, within even Israel. And I was done with this kind of, how would I say, those people who live in this neighborhood, in fact, live in diaspora in the heart of Israel. They have recreated a shtetl, an Eastern European town.
Yes.
in the heart of the Middle East. And when I look at this image, it's really a residual of diaspora in Israel. It doesn't speak about Israel. In fact, it could be, you know, in New York or in Antwerp today. But it's interesting that I was, despite the fact that I have made a point for myself not to deal with that, because I had dealt with that at a much earlier, at the very beginning of my journey, but I was caught by this moment. The table was so large. What happened around the table was so beautiful. In a way, for me, I mean, it's hard because the auditors don't have the photograph to compare. But for me, it has to do with the dream already dreamt, in a way.
Right. And there's a portrait on the wall, a 19th century painting. And the patriarch of the family looks amazingly like that same photograph. And at the other end of the table, you have young women in what is very contemporary dress of a different generation.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, you gather these photographers together, some really amazing people, Thomas Struth, Martin Kohler, Nick Woplington, and the list goes on.
Jeff Wolf, Stephen Shore.
Yes, uh-huh. And what's really interesting, Thomas Struth is probably the best known name of the photographers. And of course, we know him for these sort of monumental landscapes photographs. And there are a couple like that. He takes one of the City Hall of Tel Aviv, but another of a plasma lab, several photographs of a plasma lab, or this amazing image of, I believe it's Har Hama in East Jerusalem, which is an area where I assume this is a settlement area. And what's really amazing about it is you see on the right-hand side of the image the rural landscape we expect to see just outside of Jerusalem. On the left-hand side of the photograph, you see these very modern white settlement buildings, and they're obviously moving out. It's almost like this land has been disturbed to create another, I would assume, another group of buildings. And it's almost like a wave that's assuming the landscape. It is an amazing photograph.
Yes, indeed. It's really, I mean, and you need people of the caliber of Thomas Struth to create a piece about what appeared to him, you know, as the Tower of Babel. But you're evoking the wave, you know. Sometimes he evoked, you know, it looks like a shark almost. And this is really the last, I mean, it was the object of a long controversy, Har Hama, which is in fact a piece of land which is touching Bethlehem, and in fact the wall of separation just run after this settlement, which is in fact not so considered. It is de facto a settlement, but it is in a place which is not perceived as a settlement. And the idea, when you see, you know, the line of horizon, you see Bethlehem. And so it's basically who will occupy the land first. And so this is this logic which brought, you know, Har Hama to exist.
I was really struck by Martin Kohler's statement. He said, you know, the project quotes him as saying he felt at times like he was on a film set and he really didn't know where the reality and fiction stopped and began. And some of his images really have that sort of empty film set sort of look to them. I assume these are very much institutional apartments that appear to be empty. Just really, really interesting work.
Yes, in fact, I mean, basically, he didn't want to use any captions for his photograph, and he insists that, you know, caption will not be given to the photograph, but he spent, you know, each of the photographers spent an average of 6 months. He spent about 9 months in Israel and the West Bank, but he decided, at the exclusion of most of the other photographers, to only concentrate on Israel, per se, and his work is... He's the youngest of all photographers. His work is really at the edge of reality and fiction, and you never know where you are. And it's an incredible body of work that that Martin Kolar, a Slovak photographer, created.
Now, you mentioned that you spent 25 years trying to understand how the Jewish identity survives in places around the world. It sounds like some of your photographers caught that sort of single-minded determination to capture this place. Is it Wendy Ewald? She started out with a few projects, and it eventually grew to 14 different projects of documenting various types of the others, as you described earlier in our conversation, everything from gypsy kids in the streets to Orthodox families to Palestinian families to everything in between, documenting a military academy, the kids going through their compulsory military service. It was really a fascinating look at some of the various Israels in West Banks there are.
I would say that Wendy Ewald, for each of the photographer, this residency was a transformative experience. And for Wendy, maybe more than anybody else, and the artists who came there were able to open their heart and their mind. And they opened their heart and their mind in order to dare not to understand this place, in order to dare not to connect the dots of what makes the fabric of this place. And when I say I wanted them to get confused, but on a higher level, this is what happened. But what is beautiful, I met with Wendy at a very early stage. I didn't know her work. And the best way for me to define her is that she doesn't photograph. She gives photographs to children or young adults. And because of what she carries, she empowers them to photograph themselves. And she's truly, from that point of view, what I would call a midwife for children, dreams, and nightmares. And through this body of work, you have really Israel looking at itself from a community of gypsies living in the old town to a community of Druze to a community of Bedouins to a young religious woman in a pre-army school. You have really the subconscious of Israel looking at itself, and it's very powerful.
I was also struck by the work of Nick Woplington. I think he tried to basically to depict the West Bank settlements. One of the things that struck me is some of the West Bank settlements are somewhat modern, if you will. Others, they look like something out of the American West from the late 1800s. So, you know, it's almost like a sod house, if you will, along, you know, just this barren hillside. But what was really attracted my attention were these series of family portraits, because it's everything from what you would expect to be the stereotype to suburban families to, you know, everything in between. It's like breaking the stereotypes.
Exactly. The entire idea of the project, and Nick exemplified that. Nick, who did a true cataloging of the settlements, he went to over 170 settlements. The idea of the project was really to try to look beyond the headlines, deep into the fault line, to bear witness to the unbearable complexity and dissonance of this place. And Nick does that just with the settlers in an admirable way.
And again, every photographer took their completely different approach. I have to comment on one other photograph that I found was very striking by Rosalind Fox Solomon. And in some of her work, it looks like she's documenting African tourists that are coming in, or maybe they're residents.
Pilgrims.
Yeah, pilgrims, if you will. And But there was one of what appeared to be, and there was not a lot of guidance to this, but a scene of some turmoil with what appeared to be an Israeli woman holding this poster sort of crumpled to her chest and what appeared to be a Muslim next to her with a bowed head. And I thought that was just a really striking image.
Yes, Rosalind, who is the doyenne, the eldest of our photographers, she's 87, is, the kind of relation that she weaves with her subject is very powerful. And, I mean, this is one of many of the photographs that she has taken. Yes, she's an admirable photographer.
It was really interesting because every photographer took their own approach. Sometimes they changed what we'd expect to see from them. In the case of Thomas Struth, where some of his work is very idiomatic of what we expect to see from him, others are very different. And I assume all of the photographers sort of use this as a sort of a breaking a mold sort of experience.
Indeed. Again, you know, I think they surprised us, but they surprised themselves in many ways.
Well, now the exhibit obviously has touched a chord. What has been the reaction so far? You've been showing it. It's showing at the Brooklyn Museum now, and it was in Florida earlier.
Yeah, it started in in October 2014 in Prague, then went to Tel Aviv in May. Then went to Palm Beach in the fall of 2015, and is now in New York for 5 months. And there was two extraordinary articles 5 days apart in the New York Times, and an extraordinary review. And it seems that even before that, the public has received it wonderfully. And as long as people will dare to open their heart and eventually their mind and to really stop instrumentalizing this place and look within, I believe we will have achieved something.
You mentioned it's shown in Tel Aviv. What was the reaction in Tel Aviv to seeing these photographers photographing this place?
We were concerned. We were just saying how it will be received because we didn't involve any Israeli or Palestinian photographers. Because we were afraid to have people who were too much immersed within the conflict. But it got a great reception in Tel Aviv. And some of the leading photographers thought it was a very important contribution to the situation.
All right. Well, you can learn more at Congregation B'nai Emunah Thursday. Frederick Brenner, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
International photographer Frederick Brenner speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He'll be speaking at the Synagogue Congregation B'nai Emunah Thursday evening at 7, and that lecture is free and open to the public. If you'd like to see the images we spoke about in the interview, you can visit his website, this-place.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.